Management Research.
Hello and welcome to the Management Research Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Eugene Popatistov. Hello and welcome to the next episode in my podcast. This time we dedicate a mini-series to the field of strategic management. In my previous episode, I talked about the path dependency theory and explained how the theory appeared. It appeared based on the example of the QWERTY keyboard and why we have the letters on our keyboards allocated in this way. Why do we have in the upper left corner the letters Q, W, E, R, D, and Y? I promised you to give you some more examples. And if you remember, the three drivers of path dependency are the technical interrelatedness, economies of scale, and quasi-reversibility of your investments. And the path dependency accompanies us on all the ways and all the avenues of our life. Look at the railway stations, look at the railway as technology. We have the railways of a certain size, and you know, for instance, that in Europe the size is a bit smaller, I think about 11 centimeters smaller than in Ukraine. We have the same standard in all European Union, and the issue is that we have the trains that are made for this. We have technologies that allow us to build our railways in this way. And if you look at three factors, economies of scale, each additional kilometer of the railway costs not as much as creating the first one from scratch. So we can theoretically roll out the railways. It is expensive, but not as expensive as it was some hundreds of years ago when we started building the first railway. We have the technical interrelatedness, we have the wagons that are built in different countries and they're all of the same standard. That's why the wagon from Spain can drive till Denmark and everything would work. And we have the technology that allows us, for instance, to produce the trains for a certain speed. And I heard already an opinion from people who work in the railway sector that it would be great to have a bit broader railways because it would allow to have more stable and faster trains. But we cannot change it because we have the railways and we cannot just scratch them. It is too expensive. If we now destroy the old railway and try to build a new one, we will have to invest a lot of money, and the money we get from the old scratched railway will not even be 10% of what we need to build a new one, the new railway system in, let's say, the whole Europe. As you see, these three drivers, the technical interrelatedness, economies of scale, and reversibility or irreversibility of investments, they brought us to the lock-in state where we all have to use the same standard for the railway, and probably in the next years nothing will happen, maybe in dozens of years. Another example are the e-vehicle. You know that the whole European Union tries now to switch to green energy, and we try now to switch from combustion engines cars to e-vehicles. And it is not really the problem of the e-vehicle itself. We can produce them, we know how to produce them, technology has been here for a long time. The biggest issue are the gasoline stations. Because if you want to go somewhere by car, you can tank your car whatever you want. But if you have the e-vehicle, you have the e-car, then you can first of all drive not so far, usually about 300 till 500 kilometers, and then you have to find a station where you can fuel your car. And the technology is not there, because if you want to fuel the combustion engine car, you usually need about, I don't know, 15 minutes. But if you want to load the battery of your e-vehicle, you have to wait 1 or 2 hours, which is already hard to organize if you want to have a longer trip. We have many other issues, but as you see, the question of switching to a new types of cars is not the question of the engine or of the battery itself. It is the question of the infrastructure, of the habits that we have, of the way we live, because usually in Europe you travel a lot, and if you want to travel more than 500 kilometers, then e-vehicle will not be a feasible option for you. Finally, I want to give you an individual example that you can apply to yourself. Think about your school. And when you were at school, you learned something and you developed some competence. Let's assume that you studied chemistry and you became good in chemistry. then it is very likely that if you're good in chemistry, you will also finish the school with a good grades in chemistry and you will go to the university. And you can guess what kind of university will be or kind of faculty. Most likely it will be chemistry or biochemistry or something related to it. Then you spend another 5 years and become even more pronounced specialist in the field of chemistry. You find a work in the field, you make your internship in the field, you have your friends and colleagues who mostly come from the field or who know you as working in the field. And then if you ask yourself, in the age of 35, whether you can become a lawyer, theoretically it is absolutely possible. But practically it is not possible because of the economies of scale, because each additional skill, each additional unit of knowledge that you can learn in the field of chemistry will be easier for you than learning something completely new and something from a completely different field. All your friends, this technical interrelatedness becomes the social interrelatedness. Because if you want to switch a field, you will have to switch place of living, you will have to switch your friends, you will have to learn something new, make new connections, you will have to start working in a different field, everything will be different. And finally, we have the quasi-reversibility of your investments. Think about the time, if you had a school and then university and then work, we talk about 10, maybe 15, maybe 20 years of your experience, of the time that you invested, and you will not get the time back. And this is one of the reasons why we are locked in the path where we are and we cannot switch to something different. And actually, theoretically, we have all the options in front of us. We can do whatever we want, but in practice, we cannot, just because the investment will be too high and all the investments we have done hitherto will get lost. But there is also something positive in the path dependency theory, because we ended in a path because it was economically interesting, economically feasible, and firms start producing different goods and cannot switch from the goods to something else just because the first unit or the first product that they produced was well sold on the market and they received money. So there is a positive feedback. And it doesn't mean that your dependence or your dependency on the product is so bad, because it is bringing you money, it is the reason why you are on the market. And the railway, why should we switch from the old railway to a new one? There are some advantages and some disadvantages, but still it doesn't mean we have to switch. It works, it is fast, it allows us to resolve plenty of problems, and it is, let's say, more sustainable than, for instance, the combustion engine's cars. Path dependency is a kind of curse, because if you are there, it's very hard to go back from it. It's very hard to switch now to different types of economy. All economic models are growth-oriented. Most of economic models are growth-oriented. And if we try to convince firms to switch to circular economy, they don't even know what to do with it and have no idea how to deal with it, how to work with it, because they are in the path of the economies oriented towards the growth. But it is a very interesting aspect that if we know the drivers, we may turn it back. We may invest money and we know actually what to invest into and how to make, let's say, economies work differently or how to make our life more sustainable. Here I want to give two examples. One student of mine, he is now investigating the switch to sustainable way of conducting business, and he's thinking about how to make organizations to create a path, a new path, and what kind of steps will make them stay in this path. And he wants to analyze the three drivers of path dependency and see what kind of steps that we usually do in the field of sustainability will be more sticky, will bring the organizations more to a lock-in state. And next time, if a new government, let's say the populist government, comes to power, that they cannot reverse what we did. So we see now the path dependency as something very positive. On the other hand, I have another colleague of mine who is working on the circular economy, and for him it would be interesting to understand what are the drivers that brought us to the economic models that we use, and whether we can use the same drivers to reverse the economic models that are preferable by the firms, and maybe we can switch back and make our economy more circular and convince firms to work in a different way. So, as you see, it is a very deterministic theory, but this theory allows you for very interesting conclusions and also to decide what kind of path you want to follow. I hope it was interesting. I wish you all the best, and I'll see you in the next episode. Bye-bye.